Take the bass line out. Uh-huh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. I am Dan Favalli, coming at you with my co-host, Andy Bailey. We are super-duper stoked to be joined by Angie Treasure of the Zone Sports Network. She's the digital director for them, and she has been kind enough to hop on and talk to us about the 2017-2018 Utah Jazz as we keep this season preview train rolling. How are you doing today, Angie?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I guess a lot of stuff happened for the Jazz's offseason, you could say. And just to sort of start off, what was your – just knowing what happened, if George Hill was going to leave, which people kind of had an inkling, it felt like toward the middle or the end of the season, and if you were told that Gordon Hayward was definitely going to leave, do you think that the Jazz really could have rebounded any better than they actually did?
Well, it sounded like, from all accounts, especially from Dennis Lindsay, that they really didn't know, and they were really genuinely hanging on till the last minute on July 4th and let some offers go when Gordon decided to sign with the Celtics. So, I mean, rebounded better? I guess they would have just had to go in all in on the idea that no one was coming back, and that's pretty risky. I know there's a lot of conspiracy theorists that believe Gordon knew he was gone for a really long time, and I don't necessarily believe that. I think he did make a decision. I mean, I don't believe the Bartlestein narrative, but I do think he was making a decision up until the end. So I think the Jazz did what they could and rebounded in kind of a Moneyball way, trying to piecemeal together an offense, but I guess that remains to be seen whether that'll work this season.
I heard all the stuff about Utah possibly pass, like not being able to get guys that they had sort of on the horizon because they were waiting on Gordon. Do you have any idea who those guys are? The only one I've heard is James Johnson, and I can actually say I don't have sources, but I can say that one for sure. But anyway, the reason I bring it up is because I really don't know who was coming to Utah anyway. Like I don't know how they could have done much better if they had just been going all out with free agency from July 1st. Like it's never been a hotbed of free agency as far as a free agency destination. Now I think that's changing a little bit. I think Joe Johnson and some of the other guys who've come over recently may suggest that there's a tide shifting, but generally speaking, I don't know how they could have done much better.
Yeah, I guess you could argue that they could have gone all in on a Jimmy Butler trade or Paul George trade, but just because those guys went for not much and
yeah,
they just
true.
Wanted them out of the conference, again, you would have had to make that decision pretty early. So I guess that's what you could say, but I don't really know if that was the route they were going. The name I'd heard kind of third hand, so take it for what it's worth, was Danilo Gallinari. Like I know Dennis Ooh. Lindsay's liked him for a while. Which, you know, it's not replacing Hayward, but it would have been a primary scoring option, which is kind of a big question mark right now.
Yeah, and he would have been a nice fit next to Gobert. That's for sure.
Plus, he's foreign, so...
Yeah, he fits the mold for sure.
If we're going with the risk theme, Dennis Lindsay's collecting all the countries, and we would have had Italy in there.
I have not heard that theory. I like it.
Yeah,
I mean that'd be an
what
interesting
were you
way
say,
to
Dan,
build the team.
You off.
I was just gonna say I have zero names to add to that discussion. I have no third, fourth, or fifth hand sources. I think even the moves that they made before Hayward made his decision, it seemed like yes, they were geared towards hoping that he would stay. When you trade for Ricky Rubio, when you re-sign Joe Ingles, but that Ingles contract in particular, like that's something I probably would have wanted them to do, even if you had said before July 1 that Gordon Hayward was leaving. I know he's going to be 30 before the season starts, but he's just so good, and it seems to kind of fit their equal opportunity offensive system with guys who will work hard on the defensive end, and he switches like crazy on the defensive end. So I'm still in love, even though you could probably say he got market value or maybe $52 million over 4 years was a little high for some people. I'm still in love with that contract, even with Gordon Hayward gone, even a couple months later.
Listen, show me someone who doesn't love Joe Ingles, and I'll show you someone who hates fun. I mean, I get it, because you throw that name out there to the casual NBA fan who still shows up to Miami games in their LeBron jersey, and they're definitely not going to know who Joe Ingles is. But he's turned into a legit 3-and-D guy, and that doesn't go cheap these days, even though you're right, he is older. He didn't break into the league until later. He was a bubble guy for a while, but, like, he said Quinn Snyder made him love basketball again, and it really shows, and he's committed to the state, and he embraces Jazz basketball, and I don't think that contract's going to be an albatross at all.
One thing that's interesting about his age, too, and I totally get why that's a concern, he doesn't have a game that's, like, going to age poorly. I mean, he's already slow-mo Joe.
Come on,
he's not an above-the-rim guy.
Oh,
he's there to trash talk, and he's there to shoot threes and gamble on the perimeter because he knows Rudy's behind him, and, you know, that's going to be fine for another few years.
Speaking
of... Oh, actually, I have something just...
Okay, go ahead.
If you look, so, I'm sorry, Gobert and Ingles spent almost 175 minutes without Hayward and Hill on the floor last year, which is not, it's not a substantial size, it's not insubstantial. The Jazz defended like the league's best team, had probably an average to above average offense, and outscored opponents by 6.4 points per 100 possessions in that time. Like, that's a, yeah, I mean, who doesn't really fit with Rudy Gobert would be the real question. Like, you have to get a terrible, like, four or three guys who can't shoot, but, like, that's a very nice duo right there, and you kind of add in the talent they have around them. Like, that's just what makes me so excited about the Joe Ingles contract and this team still going for it or trying to go for it irrespective of what was going to happen with Hayward at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people thought he got kind of the Jeremy Evans contract in the sense that, like, we got to keep Gordon's guy around, but he's a playmaker. He led the team in steals last season, which I think is going to be a big part of their offense going forward, kind of defending the hell out of the half court and then trying to turn steals into fast break points. And I think he's pretty emblematic of everything this Jazz team likes and this coaching staff enjoys. And I don't know, it's not, certainly not championship caliber right now because of, I don't know, some three-headed hydra in the Bay Area, but it's I don't think it's going to be a disaster.
So you, in the last couple answers, you've brought up steals, which is something that I've thought about a lot.
You count
this
steals
summer
before you go to sleep instead of sheep?
Yes.
One of my favorite ever Joe Ingles jokes, which some people said I was being insensitive for, was that it made sense that an Australian would lead the team in steals because we sent all the criminals to Australia. And so it's just science that they would be... I don't know.
Very insensitive.
It's pretty brutal, and maybe they won't let me into Australia now, but it was worth the joke.
I think Aussies have a good enough sense of humor based on my Twitter interactions with, like, the five of them that follow me.
Yeah, they're great.
That's an adequate sample size.
But anyway, I mean, I totally agree with you that Utah has, because they have Gobert around the rim, it allows those perimeter defenders to be so much more aggressive. And I think that was a big part of Joe Ingles' defensive strength last year. And now they throw one of the best, like, ball-hawking point guards in the NBA and Ricky Rubio into that equation. And I'm already having visions of, like, the number one defense in the league this season.
Well, and are we already forgetting about Donovan Mitchell's record-breaking steals in Summer League? I mean...
Yeah, apparently I did.
Like, but it's true. And Joe Ingles said as much in Media Day on Monday. He said... Because he sat up there with, was he with Rudy? Yeah, I think he was with Rudy. And mentioned that he can gamble and he can jump passing lanes because they know Rudy's there to clean up their mistakes, for better or for worse, whether it's a good decision or a bad decision. But it did lead to him averaging the most steals on the team. So I do think between Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio, guys who have a proven track record of you know, making steals and hopefully turning that into points. We know Ricky Rubio's not great around the rim, but, and Joe's not the fastest, so maybe it's cross your fingers and hope Donovan Mitchell can lead a break, but I'm hopeful. And I do think that's what they're going to try to do with the offense this year.
You could put
go ahead, Dan.
You could put some shameless steel chasers in this, like with Ricky Rubio, Joe Ingles, and Rudy Gobert, and they'd probably just look fantastic. Like, just think about like the Monta Ellis of 3 years ago in this system. Like,
I don't want to think about that.
No, you don't want to think about it.
Such a nice conversation.
But like, you could just have that guy who literally just runs around and chase steals at the expense of blowing assignments. Because,
well, that could be Donovan Mitchell.
That's what I would
do. Do not put Donovan Mitchell in the same breath as Monta Ellis, though.
Well, at least in terms of that one little description you gave, I think he could be that guy just running all over the floor like a madman.
I mean, I could see it. And just to wrap up, like, the Joe Ingles, like both of you talking about his speed, I'm still amazed.
We could just make this a Joe Ingles podcast.
Joe Ingles is probably one of my 5 to 7 favorite players in the NBA to watch, and I can't explain it.
It's because you love fun.
Yeah, it's just – and how is he so good on defense? Like, he's too smart. Like, his anticipation is through the roof. Like, it's like he has an app that, like, basically just recalls every player's, like, play style. And he
– You know why you like him, Dan?
Hit me.
Grant Hughes told me this, like, 2 or 3 years ago, and another Bleacher Report writer, and it always stuck with me. He's like a slow-mo version of Manu Ginobili.
That would do it, because Manu Ginobili's in the top 5 of my players to watch as well.
Exactly.
It's like watching Manu Ginobili replays all the time in slow motion. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Exactly.
I made that connection. I think it was Joe's rookie season, and the Spurs came to town, and there was a screenshot of the both of them. They even look alike a little bit. Excuse Manu's bald spot, but they were both making the same face, looking in opposite directions, and it was uncanny. So it was a little bit of foreshadowing, but I totally get that.
Crazy, and like the intent, like the way they run pick and rolls, they're slightly funky left-handed release. It's pretty
they're
weird.
Kind of up and under scoop shot.
Yeah.
I need to Google image now to see these pictures where Ginobili and Joe Ingles look alike.
Oh, it's a deep cut. I'd have to find it for you.
It's on the dark web.
You'd have to search Snark Tank, and I think I used the phrase same face.
Same face. So, I'm making a note of that so I could look at it later. Thank you.
Very important.
Tips on Twitter searches.
You guys can move on from Ingles if you really want to now, I guess. But
yeah. So we mentioned... We've mentioned Donovan Mitchell a couple times now. There is a lot of optimism around him. And as a Jazz fan, it's almost a little nerve-wracking for me. Are we already, like, a little too excited about this guy? Or do you think all the hype is sort of justified at this point?
It's funny you say that, because I totally feel the same way. I'm like, oh, are we having Trey Burke 2.0 falling in love prematurely syndrome? Are we already renting a hot air balloon and they're like, hold on, we haven't even gotten to the movies yet? Like, I feel that too. I don't think we've seen anyone have the summer league that Donovan Mitchell had in a long time.
Burke was dreadful at summer league. I remember that.
Yeah, I think he proved pretty early he had some red flags. Not that Mitchell doesn't. I think his shot selection needs to improve a lot, and he's pretty cognizant of that. I think he's in a unique position where he's a rookie where a lot of hopes are getting pinned on him. You know, I think that happens to rookies a lot, obviously, but in the absence of Gordon, where we can't give our love to his Hippler haircut anymore, we've got to, like, give it to somebody, and now it's going to, I mean, Rudy, obviously, but yeah, there's a lot of hope pinned on him, and he showed so much potential, and there's this hope that, you know, he's really going to benefit from the space of the NBA game, and I think Jazz fans should temper their expectations. I don't think it's totally fair to hope he comes out and averages something crazy, because, to be honest, you don't want to be led in scoring by a rookie, because that usually means your team's not very good, unless you're the 97-98 Spurs and drafted a guy named Tim Duncan. But I think temper your expectations, enjoy the good stuff. But, you know, he's young. He's super young.
Do you think the Jazz kind of need him to be good right away, though? And maybe that's why the expectations are so hard, because they have some guys who can create shots for others, but, like, they need that go-to shot creator. And Joe Johnson's a million years old at this point, even though he still gets buckets. You have Rodney Hood, who I think everyone probably has earmarked for 20-plus points a game. this season. But unless you're kind of hoping for Dante Exum to kind of become that player, assuming he gets a chance to become that player, or if you're ever planning on cutting Alec Burks loose again, could that just be a symptom of it? Is that the Jazz sort of almost need him to be good to above average right away?
I think they definitely need him to be a contributor. You can't really put someone out on the floor and be a net negative right now. I think they really need him to be good on defense, and I think that's something he's talked about being passionate about. I mean, just think back to that summer league moment, gave me chills, where he embarrassed Jason Tatum. That was incredible.
Awesome.
That was incredible. Yeah. I mean, Huntsman had their hearts broken from Gordon Hayward, and then he gave them this like shining moment of hope, and everyone was like, "Gordon who?" So I think he's the kind of guy who's passionate about defense, and I think they're going to need him to defend. And I think we've learned that if you don't defend, Quinn's not going to play you. So I think that's where his mindset is. But as an aside, at Media Day, everyone said that who's been the most impressive in OTAs has been Donovan Mitchell. Now, I don't know if that's like a company line they were all kind of told to give, although I would be surprised. So I think he can contribute. I don't know what that looks like. I'm not super familiar with this college game, so I don't know what it's going to translate to, but you hope he has a decent shot. You hope he distributes and maybe has some awesome dunks, because he's super athletic and incredible to watch.
My hope for him, and this is kind of a weird comparison because I think they're vastly different players, but my hope for him in terms of impact is kind of like Justice Winslow's rookie year, where I think he may struggle with shooting percentages and shot selection and just offense generally, but he's so athletic and he's so aggressive defensively, which I think is okay on a Rudy Gobert-led defense, that he can still have a really strong positive impact on defense.
Yeah, I think he's got to show some discipline on both ends of the floor. I think as we've learned with Dante Exum, like, Quinn's not going to tolerate a lot of stupid mistakes. So, I mean, and maybe I think last year was interesting season because the leash was shorter because, you know, every win mattered.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, not that the team doesn't want to win, but it's not a keep Gordon or GTFO situation. So I think the leash will be a little longer than Dante's had. I know that's been a contention with Jazz fans, but he's definitely not going to be able to have no conscience out there.
Do you know who I kind of saw, with the full disclosure, that I really didn't start like looking at him until just before the draft? It was like this cross between Gary Harris and maybe Norman Powell, like the middle ground between those two players, and that would be an interesting guy for them to have on their team.
It'd be interesting. Yeah, I hope he can score like that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Dan mentioned, and you mentioned as well, Dante Exum, and he was the number 5 pick just a few years ago. He's almost a forgotten man now. Like, most of the love this summer has gone to Donovan Mitchell, and both of you know that I've been pounding the Dante Exum drum as vigorously as anyone over the last few years, so maybe I'm biased here, but he, to me, was the best player at the Utah Jazz Summer League, and I'm really curious to see what he looks like this season.
I think that's fair, and he was really good in his time at Utah Jazz Summer League. It was fun watching him and Donovan play together. They seem to enjoy it and complement each other. I think his shot's got to be more consistent. He said he didn't really fix his shot this offseason. He just is working on consistency, so that's going to be important. He's got to not make as many mistakes on defense, but he is kind of a forgotten man. I mean, he had the weird off-season injury, lost the whole season, and then a season where he didn't have an off-season to build his game up, and so was figuring it out mid-season, essentially, and so I think Jazz fans don't really know what to expect. Plus, there's the shiny new toy, so they're a little distracted.
Hey, I'll always remember last season from him, and hopefully one of you remember this game. I think it was like a Thunder game that the Jazz eventually lost, but they were down by basically a zillion points, and like the second unit was basically bringing them back, and it wasn't even the second unit. Alec Burks was on it. Like, it was second strings and third strings, and
Joel Bomboy.
Yeah, so it was just, and Dante Exum just looked like he was attacking and he was aggressive in that game, and it was really good to see. And he had that, like, random stretch in March where he shot, like, almost 37% from three. There were just so many flashes with him, and I like him because he's long and he gives you more hope on the offensive end than Michael Carter Williams by, like, a mile. He's gonna get minutes now. That's what I'm assuming, right? Like, that pack up point guard position is essentially his to lose now. I'm just curious to see, you know, he talks about consistency with his jumper, you said, and if he can stay in attack mode and he's gonna really defend his butt off, maybe he can turn into this plus player finally. I just have a hard time placing him in the NBA, and it's kind of weird to go from Ricky Rubio, who still really can't shoot, to Dante Exum, who really can't shoot at the point guard position. Like, the Jazz might have probably have the worst shooting 1-2 punch in the NBA at the point guard spot right now.
Yeah, it's not great. It's but they're awfully pretty. But I think that Dante game that you referenced against the Thunder, is he was really able to play, like, without any pressure.
And when he plays loose, there's a huge difference.
Yeah, and he's got to learn how to play with stakes. Like, absolutely, you can't be in the NBA and not on trash teams and play like you've got to just play loose. And I'm sure that's difficult. And you can also argue the Thunder had let off the gas because they were up by, I don't know, it was like 26 or something. It was ridiculous. But I think Dante has a lot of the measurables. You know, you're glad it's not a guy you drafted who's undersized, Trey Burke. and that's never going to change. Like, he is a tall, long, quick guy who's proven he can defend from his rookie season. So, you hope he figures it out. I think a lot of people were overly concerned about his feelings last season. I think you got to figure it out. You sink or swim in this league, and he's got to figure it out, and probably soon.
He's going to have to play some minutes on the wing, too, I think, this season. I remember when Snyder was first hired, there was a lot from him about positionless basketball. I think this year he might have a chance to really go for that.
Yeah, and I don't think Dante loves it. I think Dante, he said,
yeah, he definitely wants to be a one. Yeah,
he wants to be a one. He's not really happy off the ball. But again, if you are playing the true positionless basketball, then, and if you want to get minutes, but I mean, who's he going to lose out to on the backup point guard? I guess Howell Neto.
If all he's doing is backup point guard, that could be like 15 minutes. Because right. I want Rubio on the floor for 30 plus, right?
Yeah, if he can stay healthy. If the man bun doesn't come loose, I think that's a good bet.
Yeah. He is rocking that man bun for sure. My dream is like
incredible.
Yeah, he looks. He said like new team, new look, right?
Yeah,
working for
new team, new look. He looks hella swarthy, I think is a good adjective for him right now. But yeah, I'd love to see. I'm just really excited to see Ricky and Rudy. I don't know. I think that's gonna be the most fun lob in the NBA this season.
That really is. That's an exciting pick and roll combo. The one thing I'm worried about, and there's a lot of good evidence for him making big guys better, like Kevin Love and Nikola Pekovic.
Rest in peace.
On those pick and rolls, it's going to be really, seemingly it'll be really easy for the defenses to just pack around Gobert and try to deny that lob. Now, that's really hard to do with Gobert because he gets up higher than just about anybody on that play, but I'm really hoping that Rubio can keep defenders honest and at least become like average around the rim.
Well, and he's proved last season, I think our buddy Andy Larson over at KSL.com did some research about this, that he's actually pretty above average at the mid-range game. Mm-hmm. So if he can pick and pop, you know, that's, like you said, you have to keep defenses honest and they can't just hound Gobert, but that's going to be the key. If that's going to be a successful pick and roll combination, it can't be, you know, 90-10. It's got to be a little more evenly weighted.
Go ahead, Dan. No, I was just going to say, if it does become, like, if he's even a slight threat as the handler in that situation, flanking that with Rodney Hood and Joe Ingles, you start to see some semblance of a workable offense there.
Right. And the hope is that it's going to be offense by committee. And really, for that to work, you need everyone to be able to hit shots. So that's the question. I think this offense will produce good looks. I don't think that's a question. I think Quinn Snyder's smart enough to know how to get looks out of his guys. It's a little bit of a question mark whether those will go through the hoop, but we'll see.
I think it helps, just Gobert is just so long and overpowering that Rubio turned the ball over a lot in the pick and roll last year, and if I don't think defenses are going to be able to trap him or crowd him as much, because Gobert is just going to have that longer reach to get the ball wherever Rubio throws it. So you're going to have to you're going to have to play off him a little bit. So that in theory should open up space if he's going to shoot from the mid-range, like you said, his numbers are good there, or maybe it helps him get some cleaner looks at the rim. And then the metric megaton of salt would be he finished over his last 17 games last year, Ricky Rubio shot almost 36% from three on three attempts per game. I mean, he was firing away, and it wasn't like, oh, defenses were respecting his shot, they were still playing off him. But if he just shoots all of a sudden 30% from three, and the defenses have to even move out a little bit to close out on him, that's a big boon in itself for the Jazz's offense.
It's sustainable, and I don't think anything you can say can convince me otherwise. But and he's shown he can shoot well at Vivint Smart Home Arena. He destroyed the Jazz least once last season. So you can blame that on George Hill's mystery pain in his toe, but you know, it's probably not sustainable to backtrack on my hyperbolic statement, but I think you're exactly right. If he can show somewhat of a respectable three-point shooter, that really is going to complicate things for defenses.
And part of it, well, or at least I'm a big believer in just let it fly, and that helps anyway. I think I stole those words from Giannis Antetokounmpo, who said that about his three-point shot, that he's just going to let it fly. But it's like almost a Marcus Smart theory. Like, his shots aren't going in, but he's going to take them anyway. And to some extent, I guess that stretches the floor, because if you're a threat to shoot, even if it's not going in at a high level, that helps a little bit and puts a little extra pressure on the defense. But like you said, it'd be nice if he could shoot, you know, a half respectable clip from deep.
But you're right. Like, guys have to take those open shots when they're available in order for offenses to work. If every time a guy gets the ball, he balks, like, that's when we see those record scratch moments. And Quinn's gotten a little mad dad heated at Rodney Hood in the past for not shooting an open three. And I think he has that similar let it fly mentality. He wants guys to shoot it. He's never going to tell a guy like Ricky Rubio, hey, don't shoot the ball, especially because he knows Ricky's going to find the open man if that's an option. So I think the let it fly philosophy is going to stand, even for a guy like Ricky.
You guys want to hear some more sustainable numbers?
Absolutely.
Yes. So Angie said that Rubio lit up the Jazz in a game last year. I swear I've had this feeling for like 3 or 4 years that every time he plays in Utah, he's like a different player. So right when they traded for him, I decided to look it up. And in 8 career games as an opponent in Utah, Rubio averaged 12.8 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds, 2.5 steals, shot 46% from the field and 41% from three. So there's just something magical about him in Utah.
You can even just let that number, that 3-point number, slide by like 6 percentage points, and that's fine. Like, yeah, you know, it'll come to earth, but maybe he's just into the altitude.
Just have him play the 41 home games and rest him up otherwise.
Yeah.
He doesn't need that much oxygen, you know. Maybe it cuts off the flow to his brain and he just shoots better.
I like it.
What do you
think? J.R. Smith theory.
What's also good about Rubio too is, like, he had, you know, while a guy who can't space the floor like Monta Ellis has right now, he's flamed out of the league, or Rajon Rondo has just become this 1-year mercenary for teams. Like, Rubio still has a lot of value, not only because he's a more consistent defender, or in, if we're comparing him to Monta Ellis, he actually tries on defense at all, but just the decisions he makes on the offensive end, even when he's turning the ball over in the pick and roll, like, he's just so focused on making the right decision. He doesn't necessarily seem to hold the ball as long or for too long, like we saw from Rajon Rondo at points, even during his prime. So he's just such a smart player, and that's not to call Rajon Rondo an idiot. But that he's this valuable now, where I think you can say he ranks in the top half of his position or the top half among starting point guards without being a genuine threat from the perimeter, is I would say that's a huge deal.
Yeah, and the fact that he's stuck on one team for so long goes to show you a little bit like how much value that they think he has. I mean, there's a lot of guys who, like you said, the Monte Ellis, the Rajon Rondos, who bounce around the league for good reason. It's because nobody wants them on their team, and they can't figure out anything they're good at. I think we know what Ricky Rubio is good at. He also hasn't had a ton of consistency. I mean, he's had, is this his fifth coach, I think?
Yeah, fifth straight year with a different coach.
Jeez. Just,
which I can't believe is an easy thing to deal with as a player. And he said in media, at Media Day, which is maybe my favorite thing to come out of it, that he's already talked to Quinn more than he's talked to any of his other coaches ever. So, you know, I think I have a lot of high hopes for Quinn Snyder as his coach. I think Ricky's the kind of player that Quinn Snyder is going to love coaching. And I don't think he's going to be a completely different guy, but I think Quinn might have a few things up his sleeve on how to utilize him.
Well, think about how much he changed Joe Ingles' career. I think there's evidence to suggest that he can find a next level for guys.
Yeah, and if that's Quinn Snyder's like number one skill as a coach, it's a pretty darn good one to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy that's going to have a lot of responsibility on this team this year, the day after Gordon Hayward went to Boston, Dennis Lindsay publicly told the media that Rodney Hood was the number one option on the team, a guy who I think for his career averages like 12 points maybe. Do you think he's ready for this massive jump up in responsibility?
Ready or not? here we go. I mean, I think he's mentally prepared. He said at Media Day that he wants to be the most improved player. He's prepared to be the number one option. And he really makes the most sense as the number one option. I don't think he was totally healthy last season. It sounds like a lot of those things have been resolved. Maybe it's some magic Derek Favors spray that he got that's returned him to 100% health. But yeah, I think he is ready. I mean, that's not to say he'll do it, but I think he's prepared to not shy away from shots he maybe wouldn't have taken last year because, you know, there was a guy like Gordon Hayward on the floor.
I'm interested to see what he could do as a number one option. I'm wondering if he becomes kind of a more willing passer where they're meaningful passes, and Zach Lowe wrote about that at ESPN.com the other day. When you know that the ball's going to come back to you, or you know that you're guaranteed a certain number of touches, I would think it becomes a lot easier to instill like the right ideals and constructs into a player. And of course it helps, you know, you mentioned his health, we're going to say, let's say his right knee's healthy, and it's also a contract year for him. So you factor all those things together, and I don't know if he's going to be the guy that props up a top 10 offense that relies largely on half-court sets, but maybe he can be that viable number one. Even if he wouldn't be a number one on most teams, maybe he can give you an efficient, you know, 17 to 20 points per game and help you get those shots down the stretch of tight contests to give you just another alternative to, at this point, what would be Joe Johnson. Seems like if you need a bucket and it's a close game and we're talking about mid-November, like the ball's probably going to Joe Johnson.
Especially if Jamal Crawford's guarding him.
That too.
I think Rodney is probably not a 20-point-a-game scorer. I don't think that's what it's going to take to be the highest scorer on the team this year.
Could be as low as like 16.
That's really the number that sticks out in my head when I think about Rodney's season, is he's going to be about 16. You know, Rudy will probably be around 12, 14. Derek Favors, who we haven't mentioned at all, you know,
yeah,
used to be a walking double-double, so I think Rodney has the skills. He's got to be more efficient, as he's not great at getting to the line, and that's something the Jazz are going to need to replace, especially from Gordon Hayward, how many times he was able to get to the free throw line. It's a health thing. He's never had super consistency. He's had incredible games. He had that game two seasons ago when It was Kobe's last visit to Salt Lake City, and he had 30.5. I mean, it's in him. I mean, that's basically like playing by yourself on the floor, being guarded by 40-year-old Kobe. But I think it's in him. I don't know. There's big questions about the consistency for me.
And so it was either both of you or just Andy had mentioned about like it might take 16 points per game to lead this team in scoring. It immediately made me think of the 2014-2015 Hawks. And I don't think you can draw too many stylistic corollaries between those two teams, but sort of that equal opportunity approach, like that helped a team become really good, and the Jazz are not a 60-win squad, particularly in that Western Conference, but maybe that's how the offense works, is that you're really just, it's a different person every single night, and you're not getting someone to score 20-plus points a game. You have three piling on 15-plus per night, and maybe it's that type of situation. That's just the immediate thought I had. Nothing really similar stylistically, but just seeing
Snyder's, his last stop was Atlanta. So there is a connection there before he came to Utah.
They need to find their Kyle Korver, their pinball machine shooter.
I think Utah has to embrace basketball socialism, basically, which is difficult in a red state, but I think that's absolutely right. And yeah, like the Hawks, that was a question in Media Day. It was drawing similarity to the Hawks. And, you know, there's position by position, you can't get much different than, like, Jeff Teague to Ricky Rubio. Those are not similar point guards. Al Horford and Rudy Gobert might be in the opposite ends of the spectrum. But the point stands that, yeah, they're going to need a bunch of guys to score 15 a game in order to have a fighting chance.
One more thing on Hood, too. I'm not the first person to cite this number, but I looked it up while I was writing a Jazz preview the other day. He played 694 minutes without Hayward, and he averaged 21.3 points per 36 minutes and shot 45% from the field in those minutes.
He was better without Gordon on the floor, for sure.
Yeah, and I actually ran up right after Gordon left in my salty misery. I ran a little thread of a bunch of guys who were like more efficient with Hayward off the floor. Now, a lot of that could be the fact that maybe they were playing second units. But it was a pretty surprising trend. I think it was everybody except for Derek Favors had like a pretty sizable jump in true shooting percentage when they were on the floor without Hayward. It was surprising to me.
Yeah. So I guess if your starting lineup is Ricky Rubio, Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles at the three.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, I think that's like the safe money right now.
I think you can get two of those guys to regularly. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting because you're going to have to stagger your scoring. I mean, you need your bench guys to produce because Joe's not going to regularly score double digits, Joe Ingles. I mean,
watch him be the guy who comes out and averages 20.
He just Mike Conley's it, like Mason Heath and Mike Conley did last year.
He would be insufferable in the locker room. I can't even tell you. He was so cocky when he had the three-point percentage record in the league.
Well, I would be all for that.
Sure.
It's going to be tough to, like, have a consistently... Like, I think they could probably finish top 20. I think top 15 is going to be tough offensively.
In offense? Yeah. I think shooting for average is ambitious. But you don't want to be bottom 10. So I think we're basically saying the exact same things in different words. So listeners can enjoy hearing, you know, the same exact thing twice in a row.
But if they do get into that like 15 to 20 range and they have like the one or two defense, that's still a really interesting overall team.
Should be a playoff team. I mean, the West is BANANAS this year, but usually a top three defense should get you in the playoffs.
Yeah, you would think.
And they might be able to get by. Like they were, I think, among the top six or seven teams in just pick and roll frequency last year. And maybe that's your crutch, like the Ricky Rubio, Rudy Gobert pick and roll, which we touched on briefly before. But maybe you can build an average offense around it just because Gobert is so devastating coming off those screens, and Ricky Rubio he's a good ball handler. Like I said before, he can turn the ball over a lot of points in the pick and roll, but if that's your go-to play and you have enough shooters around them, and Hood can be an above-average shooter. We know Joe Ingles is an above-average shooter, and maybe you get to a point where you're going to rely more on Joe Johnson at the four if Derek Favors isn't on, or you could throw Jonas Jerebko there, and that's just the extra spacer if you want to go kind of more traditionally sized, and perhaps that's something for long stretches at a time where you're playing average to above-average offense.
And that's another thing, is just having you list off some of these guys. This team has some depth. Like, yeah. it's not top. I mean, obviously there's Rudy and then everyone else, but like, it's not a complete trash bench. Like, I looked at the Hawks roster the other day and started laughing. I mean, they stopped bleeding recently after I visited my optometrist, but it's not a horrible bench. I mean, you know, Ekpe Udo is interesting coming back into the league. Thabo Sevilosha is a serviceable defender, 3-and-D guy. Donovan Mitchell, Dante Exum, Alec Burks, Jonas Jerebko. Like, it's actual basketball players, in my opinion. I mean, Alec Burks.
I might even lean deeper into it than you did. I would say that this is a hella good bench. Like, they are deep. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the center position behind Gobert is a little wonky, but you don't need it to be anything more than a little wonky because you have him, and you could throw Jonas Jerebko or Derek
Bradley.
Favors at center too. So
yeah. Just,
they stretch at least two deep at every, like, two NBA players deep at every position, and that's not something, I would say maybe half the league can say that, if that.
Right. It's definitely Dennis Lindsay special, and he's done a pretty decent job of roster building, in my opinion, in the wake of the fire and flames that was left in Salt Lake City. But I think there's real depth on this team. Hopefully they won't have to rely on it for injury reasons, but yeah, I think I have a feeling Quinn's gonna love Jerebko as a stretch four. Like, That just screams Quinn to me, is that we're going to get, last year it was Shelvin Mack. I feel like this year we're going to get complaints about Jonas Jerebko. But I'm into it because he's Swedish, and I like the nickname Swedish Swish.
Oh, is that actually his nickname, and why have I not heard it before?
I don't know if it is, but I saw it on the timeline the other day.
Yeah, that's official.
It kind of sounds like you're having a stroke, but I'm into it.
Well, it's not on Basketball Reference, so that should be the campaign.
What's his nickname?
He doesn't have one.
He doesn't have one, which is awful.
Oh, did you look it up too, Dan?
Yeah. I mean, and let's take this with maybe he does have one, because Basketball Reference, as we found out during our Celtics preview, is unreliable. I got really excited about the pronunciation of Semi Ogilvy's name or whatever.
I still trust it. I think it's Shimmy.
Shimmy Ogilvy was how they told you to pronounce it. I was totally into that.
Well, I think Basketball Reference says Joe Johnson is the Armadillo Cowboy as one of his nicknames, which I'd never heard.
Yeah, there's some that I've never heard before.
I don't know what would possess you to call anyone the Armadillo Cowboy.
Especially when it's Joe Jesus, for crying out loud.
And that's not even
that
on there.
That one is not on his,
It's ISO Joe and Joe Cool and Big Shot Joe and then Armadillo Cowboy.
Big Shot Joe is another one I've never heard before.
I don't understand. I think it's bad.
Yeah, that's really bad. But Swedish Swish,
Can you say than once? Like, Swedish Swish, I can't say it once.
You
Swedish
can.
Swish.
Well, you're drunk, so that's not
I
a good
wish.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'll be interested to see how Quinn uses him, because he loves the idea of stretch force, so we'll see.
The minutes in the front court are really interesting to me. Dan talked about backup center, and my crazy idea is, well, and it's not that crazy because Quinn Snyder did it for a big chunk of last year. If Derek Favors plays all of the backup 5 minutes, then he's not playing a ton at the four, and then I think that's when lineups can get really interesting, when you play Joe Johnson at the four. And I've tried to work out Utah's lineup, and because they're so deep, it's kind of hard to figure out who's going to play and where and how many minutes. There's a way they could play it where, and this is going to sound weird right after we talked about Jonas Jerebko, but I think there's a rotation out there that's just Favors and Gobert, the only two, like, traditional bigs who play.
Could be. And if we're going traditional, we're going against positions in basketball, you don't really need to have a traditional center, I guess. But I don't know who gets those backup 5 minutes. It sounded on Media Day like Favors would rather not play so much five. I think that was hard on him. And obviously, if he's got any of his mobility, he's probably a little more valuable at the four. But I don't know. Do you slide Udo in there? Do you give Tony Bradley minutes? I think he's probably a little green for that. But yeah, it's you could have a lot of wonky lineups at in the front court, especially when Gobert's not on the floor.
Playing Udo and Bradley would go a long way towards building up Rudy Gobert's MVP case when we see how good the Jazz are not without him on the floor.
Yeah. And I think he's going to play a lot of minutes every game. I don't think he's going to want to be off the floor, or you're going to want to have him not on the floor.
We haven't, this is a good segue. He's really the only guy that we haven't touched on.
And
he's
diving into the Rudy Gobert rabbit hole.
Obviously, the best player on this team. I think he was the best player last season too. Maybe that gets into a debate of what the difference between best and most impactful is. But, and to me, he's also the best defender in the league. And I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but this guy, is a true superstar, and it's one of the reasons I'm not as worried as some other people are that this team's just going to kind of fall off a cliff.
I just don't. I think the difference between tanking and not tanking is Rudy Gobert, right? Like, you just can't be horrendous with a guy like that on your team. And maybe I'll get proven wrong. Maybe this team is. I don't think they're going to be trash because there's Quinn Snyder and there's Rudy Gobert, and I think these guys will find a way. But Rudy is so good. Like, I know we devalue his skill set a little bit, I guess, in some of the in vogue, you know, it's pace and space era and going small, and I love that style of basketball too, and there's a reason why it works. But like, if you're gonna be the dunker shot blocker, you do it like Rudy Gobert does it, and I think he's so good for that reason.
In terms of his skill set, sorry, Dan.
No, don't apologize.
People do. I mean, they talk about he needs to add a post-up game or a jump hook or a 10-foot jumper. And I hear that over and over and over, and I just had the thought, Dwight Howard was considered like the second or third best player in the league for a couple of years. So I compared Rudy to a couple of those prime Dwight years. And with the exception of just volume, like Dwight was getting more shots. Rudy tops him in basically every statistical category.
Yeah,
he is a dominant player.
He's really dominant, and I think that's the other part of it is that his game isn't that varied. You know, he's dunking and he's making plays around the rim, and for a lot of old school guys, that's not good enough. But like, the post up is trash. Like, you don't ever
position.
Like, oh, yeah. I really want to watch Rudy Gobert post up, or would you rather watch him, you know, catch lobs and be a way more efficient? Like, and I don't think they're trying to give Rudy a post-up game. I get the case for having a little hook shot or a little floater in the lane, but like, he's doing what he needs to be doing. He's dominant around the rim. He hits his enough free throws that he's not DeAndre Jordan, and you know, like, the other pieces stay healthy, and he's so fun. I mean, like, I think Dan Clayton has a mix of all his passes from last season, which we Jazz fans lovingly call Notre Dimes. And they're just, he's like behind the back, between the legs. He's got that Joe Ingles fun factor, and he has a chip on his shoulder, which I think for some guys is really obnoxious and really performative. But for him, I really do think he wants to shirk all of the European big man stereotypes and really wants to be great.
It has to help too, like, just looking at his defensive game, like, he's so much more than just like the rim protector. Like, he can switch. He averaged more defensive possessions against spot up shooters than Gordon Hayward per game last year. Like, he's all over the place, and you watch, you know, what separates him from some of these other more traditional bigs is that he is all over the place on the defensive end, and so he doesn't, I wouldn't say he needs to step out and do anything on the offensive end. I think Tim McMahon at ESPN.com published a piece in the middle of last season where it said that like Gobert has been kind of interested in expanding his offensive role, and Quinn Snyder kind of like throws him a play that'll draw up like a floater or baby jumper in the lane for him every once in a while, or a post up, but that they don't envision expanding his role. And I don't think if he's going to play and try his ass off on defense like he does and go all over the place and be more than just that rim protector, I don't see why you would mess with his formula on offense at all.
I just think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think trying to adapt to a less efficient style of play doesn't make any sense. You're going to give him, I guess if he has more possessions, then it makes sense that some of them are going to be less efficient. But like, it just doesn't make sense. And I think he likes to goof around about, you know, stretching the floor, and he'll take 3-point shots. But I think he ultimately is smart enough to know that that's not going to be his game. And I think Quinn is smart enough to know that he's not going to build an offense around your 7-footer picking and popping. So I agree with you. I don't think they're going to try to expand his offensive game in any kind of radical way. And I think that's for the better.
Yeah, and like we've all said now, even if he just continues to do what he does, I really think he's one of the most dominant players in the league.
Do you both have him as, or do either of you have him as the best center in the league?
I do. I was kind of upset he didn't win first team all NBA. But I'm
remind,
like I said
remind
earlier,
me who was first team all NBA.
It was Anthony Davis.
Oh yeah, that was
which
debatable.
I mean, he's a great player. But here was my two things. I don't think it was debatable that Rudy Gobert had a more positive impact on a better team last season. And Anthony Davis isn't even a center. And center is, it's not a thing in the All-Star teams anymore. It's still a designation on all NBA. So I was a little put off by that.
I just enjoy that, like, Alex Lynn or Rudy Gobert used to be a conversation. So
oh my God.
Yeah, we've come a long way.
Or even, yeah. Andy, do you remember when we had, what was it, Hassan Whiteside and Rudy Gobert became a conversation at one point?
Hey, don't say that around Miami that. Twitter. They will lose their mind.
Hassan Whiteside's good. Still... He's not in the same stratosphere as Rudy Gobert. I mean, maybe his Snapchat's better, but that's about the only thing.
You should approach some Miami fans with that, Dan, just to see.
Didn't we needle Wes Goldberg about? No, we didn't. Not about this topic. We should have.
We should have, yeah.
Nerlens fans were also...
Really? I did not see
that. Oh, man, I haven't heard that one.
Nerlens versus Rudy was a big deal.
I mean, even if you...
Go ahead, Dan.
Like, if your name... If we were just to say, like, try and name big men who could be in the argument as better than Rudy Gobert, like, you can't come up with five. Like, there's just not five. There's...
I think the only,
I would think
true
Towns?
Center...
Go ahead.
Yeah, Towns is...
Towns,
he will be
Gasol.
In there. I think Cousins, even with his attitude problems, is in there.
I would probably just put Jokic, Cousins, and Towns. I don't even know if I love Marc Gasol, but like Rudy Gobert is just so dominant now.
I think I would have Jokic in there too. I think Jokic is offensively what Gobert is. Like, they're kind of mirror images of each other.
Ooh. We just need to mash them into one person and have a basketball savant.
Yeah.
I don't know if the world's ready for that. That would be that's a good not. I didn't even think about that. They're like the mirror images. I like that.
That would be like
although
fully
I would
healthy prime Bill Walton.
I would argue that Rudy is more serviceable on offense than Jokic is on defense.
Yes, I think I would agree there. Even with, and I'm one of the people that think Jokic's defense isn't as bad as advertised. I think you look at what Rudy Gobert can just do in the pick and roll in what is a pick and roll league, then absolutely.
Windshares had, like, it's been beaten to death over the last few years, but I think Rudy was like 11th in the league in offensive win shares last year.
I mean, the dunker efficiency is a thing. I mean,
yeah,
we undervalue
absolutely.
It, and it's not... I mean, I think it's fun to watch, but...
A lot of people have made this point, but it's like, if everyone could get a dunk on all their shot attempts, they would.
Right.
It's just that there's maybe 3 or 4 guys in the league who are legitimately capable of that.
If you could putt from a foot away or 10 feet away,
yeah,
and it meant the same, you would putt from a foot away. Like,
that's a good analogy, too.
It's absolutely true. he would putt from 17 feet away.
Yeah. So with apologies to anyone on this roster that got no more than a mention. I think we've pretty much been top to bottom.
Sorry, Royce O'Neal.
Yeah.
No time for you.
That's when I wasn't even thinking about. You probably know all the like two-way and like non-guaranteed guys better than either of us do.
I could point them out in Salt Lake City and say that's a basketball player.
There you go. What do you think is the ceiling for this team? Wins and losses wise and seed in the West.
Ceiling. Oh my gosh.
And we're going to do floor too, just to as a warning.
I'm a noted pessimist. So I would say 45 wins.
That is pessimistic, at least for me. We'll see what Dan says.
As a ceiling, yeah, I think I'd call it pessimistic. Like, I think, is there even a conversation about the Jazz being bad this year? Like, is that a thing that, I haven't seen too much of it.
I've seen people say they're going to be the 11th
top
seed.
10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if, like, Rudy Gobert, like, goes on
dies.
A time of vacation. Yeah, dies. Yeah, I wasn't going to go there.
We thought
somebody
died.
Knock on all the wood.
We thought he died in game one of the Clippers series, right? Like,
oh, that was terrifying, yeah.
I think everyone was watching that game the first minute and went and threw up, and we're like, well, it was a nice run, and then miracles happened. So maybe he's used one of his 9 lives, but crossing.
Where do you have him, Dan, in terms of ceiling? I'm doing that too, by the way.
I could see them getting to 48, and there's not an ink. Like, if Donovan Mitchell and Rodney Hood hit as these just high-end shot creators, and maybe the second unit plays a lot faster than the starting lineup, I wouldn't put 49, 50 outside that realm of possibility, but I think 48 is a fair and reachable ceiling for this squad, just given its depth and like you two have beat to death, just having Rudy Gobert and Ricky Rubio and Joe Ingles, and then just working back from off of those three who are all just very malleable for what the Jazz need. I would think that they could definitely get, if everyone stays healthy, above 45 victories.
And seeding is so hard to figure out too, right? Because like the middle in the West is so weird to me. Like, there's obvious upper echelon teams, and then there's just this thick, juicy middle. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what Denver's gonna look like. I think there's odds that like Denver, Houston, Clippers. Like, I mean, OKC is gonna be good, but like Portland, it's just a lot of question marks.
I think there's a clear top four, and I think that's Golden State, San Antonio, the Thunder, and the Rockets. I'm pretty set on Minnesota at 5, and then that's where I think your juicy middle, as you described it. It's like, it's like
our
6
winter,
to 11.
Our winter weight is right
there. Yeah. Exactly.
I can't get into the Minnesota Timberwolves for some reason. Like, I think they could be good. There's a more than feasible scenario in which the Jazz are better than them or the Nuggets or the Clippers.
Is it wrong that, like, for chaos's sake, I kind of hope that the Timberwolves are trash? Or not trash, but, like...
It would be kind of funny because everybody is convinced, and like I said, I am. So it would be kind of funny if that just kind of blew up.
They've got such a lovely streak going about not making the playoffs. Why would you want to ruin that?
And not living up to the expectations too.
Well, when Derrick Rose gets bought out midseason by Cleveland and signs in Minnesota, that's when it'll all happen.
Tibbs starts putting the team back together, and we'll know that things have gone awry.
Somebody get Ronnie Brewer out here.
No, I think they're probably going to be there. But, like, again, they haven't proven they can do it. Like, I guess Jimmy Butler's proven he can put a team on his back in the East.
That's exactly what it is for me, is Butler.
But
yeah, there's a huge difference between the East and the West. And I'm going to say for ceiling, for me, and I'm going to say it quickly and then throw it to floors for both of you so you can't say anything, but I'm going to say 50. So, Angie, what's your floor for the Jazz?
I'd say like 38.
Oof. Dan,
well, you are pessimistic.
Listen, I've lived this before. I just don't want to get hurt again.
Yeah, I guess they could have. I don't know. I would put their floor at 40, and I know we're talking about a difference of like, and maybe even 41. I know we're talking about a difference of 2 or 3 victories, but similar to how I kind of look at a team like the Celtics, who has more star power, but you look at them and they have so much talent, there's only so far they can fall, even with all the changes they've undergone. And I see that in Utah's depth. I'm not talking about star power there, but if Rudy Gobert's you know, going to be Rudy Gobert. There's only so far that this team can fall, and I would be honestly surprised if they fell below that 40-win threshold. And if they did, I would think it's because maybe there was some mid-season shakeup because the beginning of the year didn't get off to how they had hoped.
I'm going to say 42, and I know that's a pretty big range between 40 and 50, but I can envision an offense that's just painful to watch. Like, all these guys don't take the jump that maybe they're expected to. Nobody besides Joe Ingles can hit a three, and Rodney Hood will be like around league average from three. I could see it being a real slog offensively, but like I said, I am at the same time optimistic about what this defense might be able to accomplish.
Are you predicting 42 or 40 also?
40 also.
That got okay. me too, so thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. Well, unless either of you guys have anything else you want to add, I think that's a pretty good summation of the upcoming Jazz season. So thank you so much for joining us, Angie.
Yes,
shout out
you.
To Howell Netto, who I didn't get to mention as much Absolutely. As I would like. But,
yeah, what's the deal with his eyelashes? I need to know about this.
It's just a big international pretty off between him and Ricky right now, and I'm just not quite sure who's winning.
Even with like Ricky, and I think I said this on Twitter, he's trying to be like Hans Gruber and Ben Affleck from Argo at the same time. I don't like how does he?
Ooh, don't ruin it! Don't ruin it! Don't ruin it for me. I just heard him speak Spanish on Monday, and so I was very like that Barcelona accent.
My wife said he looks like Andrew Garfield in Silence, which I kind of see.
Yeah, I don't know. It's visceral, you guys. I can't explain it.
Okay. Sorry.
Are you okay, or do you need a minute?
Well, you
Are
got
you
me
fanning yourself? I can hear yeah. you fanning yourself.
What's How the... will that really get me going? What were you going to say, Dan?
Ricky Rubinioni looks like he's getting ready to film the sequel to The Revenant or something. Like, that's what he looks like.
Yeah.
He's like a frontiersman.
I would be there.
That would
for
be
the
perfect. That would be the perfect way to put it. A frontiersman.
Okay, if you guys want to contact Angie on Twitter or find her work online, where can they do that, Angie?
I'm very obnoxious on Twitter at SnarkTank, Snark_Tank, or you can follow me at 1280thezone.com. I usually write up recaps after every game. And that's where you can harass me.
One of the best Twitter handles in the game and one of the best Twitter cover photos.
And it's never going to change.
That's brilliant.
Dan, you can also follow Dan if you want to talk to him about Monte Ellis on Twitter, which I know he is just dying to do. You can find him at Dan Favale, Favale. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. As always, we would love for you guys to subscribe. Leave ratings, talk to your friends about it, because we know that you're just dying to share it with them. And until next time, we leave you with the obligatory shout-out, which actually has a connection to the Jazz, the shout-out to Beno Udrih.